Good afternoon, Dan. I'm going to have a few comments here. Today is July 19th, 2011. We're meeting with one of the early graduates of Marist College, Dan Kuffner. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Gus. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you come. Dan, this will be in three or four parts. The first, before Marist, could you just give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of your early background, born, brought up, grade school, and I'll ask you some questions pertinent to that.
Good. My twin brother, Bill, and I were born on March 17, 1947, the fifth and sixth children of Charlie and Jesse Kuffner from Staten Island, New York.
March 17th, did you say?
March 17th,
and
yes.
There's no Patrick in this?
He's William Patrick.
Oh, okay.
We were named after my dad's two oldest brothers, one of whom had no children, the other had one daughter. And we grew up on Staten Island with our family. I have three other brothers, one deceased, and a sister. We went to Sacred Heart School on Staten Island, St. Peter's High School on Staten Island, and came here to Marist in 1964, actually with 17 other St. Peter's High School classmates to the class of 64.
All right, let's go back to high school a little bit. During the high school years, what kind of activities were you involved in? Were you in sports?
Yes, I was.
Hobbies?
I was in sports. I participated for the freshman and JV basketball teams. I ran cross-country track in my senior year. I participated in the glee club and chorus at St. Peter's, which was extremely well-known and well-established for all 4 years. I was on the student council, being vice president in my senior year.
Outside of the school time now, how about summers? Did you have jobs? Did you work? Did you participate in activities?
Yes. At age 16, both Bill and I were hired by the New York City Department of Parks as seasonal park helpers.
Uh-huh.
We worked for 4 years during the summers.
Uh-huh.
So we started in between our junior and senior year in high school and continued to do that for four consecutive years.
Uh-huh.
So we were SPH guys. One of our greatest memories was learning how to drive both tractors and garbage trucks on the beach at age 16.
Uh-huh.
And because we had a uniform on, nobody asked us for a license.
So. Very interesting, very interesting. Let's move it along. How about coming to Marist? How did you find Marist way out there on Staten Island?
Well, a number of our classmates had already applied and had been accepted. And one of our closest friends, who continues to be so today, Brendan Burke, had already been accepted, and Brendan was talking it up a tad. Another good friend, Charlie DeSogra, and I came up to Marist in April of our senior year in high school. We were interviewed by Tom Wade.
Uh-huh.
Charlie was a far more superior student than I, and maybe Tom was impressed with the fact that I came with him, but we came to Marist and was accepted. Bill had originally planned to go to Barrytown.
Uh-huh.
And the vice principal at St. Peter's, who was uniquely known as Brother Peter, had a great connection here with Marist and made a phone call and asked if Bill could also attend as late as August of 64.
Uh-huh.
And the community said yes, so we came together.
Uh-huh. You mentioned Tom Wade. Are you still in touch with him?
He's very much so.
In
Hyde
Park.
I live on Roosevelt Road in Hyde Park. Tom lives right down the street, around the corner on Gilbert Drive, and I see Tom and Ann regularly.
Uh-huh.
He's actually one of my constituents as a legislator.
Yeah, I sent him a little note yesterday with some pictures of a tour we had of the Esopus Mansion.
Oh, terrific! Yeah,
No,
we've stayed in good
15th.
Touch with Tom.
Good. I still had to get convinced, though. Why would you come to Marist, which was such a small, unknown, unsophisticated college in 1964?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, Gus. I had this dream of being a dentist. And my oldest brother, Charlie, who was 10 years my senior, and I sent resumes and applications to seven different colleges prior to applying to Marist. I applied for dentistry. And I was rejected from all seven of them. My grades in high school weren't that great, neither were my SATs. So knowing that I wanted to have a college experience and knowing that so many of my other classmates were coming to Marist, I already mentioned Brendan and Charlie, that was kind of the impetus. It wasn't so far away. Poughkeepsie was by train available, and Charlie and I actually took a bus from New York City up. A lot of things just happened to fall into place kind of by accident, some of them on purpose.
Uh-huh. Okay. Then you would, of course, would have been a resident here.
Yes.
You stayed in the dormitory. At that time, was Sheehan up or any of the dormitories?
Oh, yeah, both Leo and Sheehan were the only two dorms, and Champagne was under construction at the time.
Okay.
I was on the fifth floor, and Leo and Bill was on the sixth.
Uh-huh, okay. And while in the college here now, what was your major concentration? What were you calling it in those days?
I was a history major.
A history major.
Had no idea what I was actually going to do with it, but I enjoyed history in high school. One back up a little bit. Bill and I were young for our class. We only turned 17 in March of our senior year in high school. So I was the youngest kid in class all my entire life. So when we came to Marist, most of the guys were already 18, well into their 18th year. So we had a whole chunk of time to go. I don't regret that whatsoever, but I was very naive, considerably naive when I entered college. And luckily we met some outstanding guys who are still friends today.
Uh-huh.
And
yes, I want to get Brendan Burke in here sometime.
Yeah.
He's
Burkey
has a reputation, has helped the college in many ways.
Yes.
What I want to ask you now about, you talk about history. Do you remember some of your history professors? You remember Roscoe Walsh? Was he here?
We had the history of art and architecture with Roscoe. I was overwhelmed. I had never traveled. The furthest we ever went was to Long Island, Santa Maria, to meet one of my aunts. I had rarely been off Staten Island, and all of a sudden you get this incredible stuff being shown to you.
Yes.
And Roscoe used to like to show a lot of slides and things of the trips that he had taken. So, yes, we had Roscoe. I had George Score. I loved
yes.
George Score. He was the one who I think really got me to another level as far as history is concerned, going up to the Roosevelt Estate and doing research in the library.
Yeah.
I loved his History of the Presidents. He had a course on Eleanor Roosevelt. He was great. Ed Cashin was fabulous.
Oh, Ed Cashin, yeah.
But Jerry White would be the one who has to stand out on top of that whole list. He still refers to me as Mr. Kuffner, A or B. He never could tell Bill and I apart. And to see Jerry to this date and to continue to have a reminiscence with him, Jerry was terrific. So there were some great folks. Vince Toscano later on was wonderful. Lou Zuccarello for politics.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to get into the details of some of that simply because I think you got injected with a certain curiosity and understanding of the nature of political science and what was involved and the importance of it. I mean, we do need good government, and it's through the politics that we get there. Maybe back up a little bit. Did you take Lou Zuccarello for a course?
I had Lou for one poli-sci course. He was getting involved in the administrative levels and so on.
He used to become dean.
Eventually, yes. But I had him for one course. Interesting, as I'll jump forward real quick. Bill's daughter, Margaret, came to Marist, graduated in 06 as a political science major. And she took every conceivable course Lou taught. So that was a great tie-in. But, as I said, George Score really helped me to see some of the importance of history beyond dates. He started to get me so very much involved in Roosevelt and the things that were going on in the Roosevelt era. I went down to Washington, D.C. and had an interview with a man who was an intern clerk during the sick chicken case in 1937. And I had the opportunity to interview him. He was my first person reference. It was wonderful. I stayed up here between my junior and senior year. I took a 6-credit course with George on the Roosevelt presidency. It was marvelous, absolutely marvelous. But they were, Bill and I had this conversation. Gus, and I'll include you in the loop. There were so many fine, incredible men who were on staff here. I never had a female teacher while I was here at Marist. I know there was some on staff, but I didn't have that honor. But the men, you know, Richard LaPietra and Michael Kelly and Marty Lang.
Did you have Richard LaPietra?
Oh, I sure did. He was my floor proctor in freshman year.
Oh, okay.
And he would have weekly meetings.
Yes.
You know, he'd bring a few of us down to the room on the side of his room and was so genuine and so real. And we'd talk a lot about religion. We'd talk politics. We'd talk general life.
Yeah.
And he permitted us to get into his mind a tad so that he would have the comfort of getting into ours somewhat.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always called him Lappy behind his back, but we knew that he affectionately loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I remained close with him throughout his entire life. Any opportunity on campus, if he was here, he was the first person I would go over and talk to.
Yeah.
And mourned his death greatly. Have met his wife. She's a lovely lady.
Barbara.
You know, so the men who wore the garb and those who didn't, Tom Casey.
Yeah.
I mean, just a remarkable man. Bob Norman.
Yeah.
Bobby Norman, he gave me the greatest compliment in the entire world. I eventually got into teaching when we graduated. I was working at the Violet Avenue School right up the street here on Fulton Avenue.
I know where it is, yes.
Bobby's oldest son, Bob, was a child with some learning disabilities. He had some emotional issues, and he was being schooled considerably at BOCES, and then they brought him back to St. Peter's, but he was ready to come to Violet Avenue School. And when Bob Norman Sr. saw that my name was on the 6th grade class list, he said to the principal, "I need my son to have this man." Well, Bob Norman Jr. and I, he was just the most incredible kid in the world. And again, to this date, he still calls me Mr. K. And he was a walking encyclopedia of anything sports related data wise.
Did you have
wonderful
moment for speech? Did you take?
I sure did. Public speaking.
Public speaking.
Absolutely.
In fact, I can go back a little bit. You might have even had a speed reading course with him.
I might have.
There was a project on at the time. It was pretty much in the summer school, where you could, you know, learn how to read faster by fixations and moving your eye, not looking at every word, but by groups of words, and then various tests. And I remember it was almost a guaranteed A if you took the course.
Absolutely. Well, Bullet Bob, as we affectionately called him, with his love of St. Bonaventure and Syracuse, what I didn't know was that he was also an announcer on WEOK radio.
Yes.
And then, you know, he tuned that into us every once in a while, so we began catching him on the local radio. Now, coming from, quote, the city, we had many different radio stations available to us. But way back in the 60s, all we had here was WEOK and WKIP.
Yeah.
And then you had to rig some gigantic wire out your window just to get reception anyhow. So, But, yeah.
And time he went to New York, he went to CBS, you know, and did, well, he called it the grave night shift that he would have. But he had public exposure during that time, and he had a very good voice.
He had a fabulous voice.
Wonderful voice.
Well, he also helped to develop the communications internship. I mean, what he did for this college was remarkable.
Yeah,
I'm still very close to his son Jimmy today. My wife taught both of Jimmy's sons. And
is Jimmy at the CIA yet, or where is he now?
Oh, that's a real good question. I believe he is. But he brought Mike Kelly's, John Kelly's house in Hyde Park. Over on Albee Drive and added on to it, and his dad lived with him in the later years of his life.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Great stuff.
Moving on, in college here now, how about your activities outside of learning from these professors, whom I revere too, and, mm-hmm. and I was going to give you a list of those I've interviewed, and you would see on there many of those names. One name didn't come up. He might not have been here yet. Peter O'Keefe.
He was here, psychology.
No, it's Ed O'Keefe.
That's Ed O'Keefe, okay.
Yeah, Peter came maybe in the late 60s, early 70s.
And then I didn't have the privilege.
Yeah.
But my activities at Marist.
Yes.
Freshman year, I ran cross country. Uh-huh. I was elected to the corresponding secretary position of class officers. Uh-huh. Bill and I remembered that Marist was a social hub, where I recall writing letters to every conceivable women's college in the neighborhood, inviting them to mixers.
Oh, Lord, yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
On Saturday nights, yeah. In the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And we had beer mixers. It was quite unusual. And we had women come up from Good Counsel College and what used to be Lady Cliff and Bennett College and Mount St. Mary's and so on. So that was part of it. I also got involved in student government later on. I became one of the class reps to the student government.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because surely it was in the formative stage. I don't know that they had a constitution or that they had, you know.
We actually did.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember Bob Johnson. He was the year ahead of us. Bob was very aggressive, and he eventually became the president of the student body in his senior year. Jim Morrison was one of my classmates who got very much involved. Mike Tobin was involved in what was the then the residence board. Charlie DeSoger was also on that. Yeah, we tried to keep the rules and regulations, but one of the things I remember so much about our freshman year was that we had to wear ties to school and usually jackets. We had a mandatory 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. study hour where your door was open and you had to be at your desk.
You were in the La Pietra dorm, which was probably the most stringently.
It most certainly was. Fifth floor Leo, those doors were open. There's a very funny anecdote to one of those stories, too, but I won't embarrass the guy. But we had, you know, there was a lot of, like I was saying, emphasis on religion, but theology, a way of life. Yeah. Not necessarily catechism. You know, it was discussion. Well, what do you, you know, what
right,
helps you to feel
to as well?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, how to become a man.
Yeah.
How are you going to project yourself into the adult world once you are beyond the doors of Marist?
Yeah.
And, you know, having those kinds of discussions.
Yeah.
I never had that opportunity, even though I had my twin and three older brothers.
Yeah.
We didn't get into those kinds of discussions. It was always sports and this, that, and the other thing.
And I think this is my view and take on it. Because it was a small college, there were many more opportunities for that kind of interaction with professors.
Absolutely.
And you didn't get their associates some or their underlings, you know.
You got the real McCoy.
You got real McCoy and those kinds of things.
Yeah, it was wonderful stuff.
Yeah. The activities in student government, were you a court also? Did students have to...
Well, they did for the residence halls.
Yeah,
if there were infractions, the residence hall group would deal with those. And then if there had to be some enforcement, usually the college administration would support it.
Was there a brother Paul here at that
Paul
time?
Paul Stokes.
Oh, you remember Paul Stokes?
Oh, do I ever. I remember Paul Stokes saying to us as we were lined up in what is now Marion Hall, the gym, he says, all right, look to your left, look to your right. One of you guys aren't going to be here by the time freshman year ends.
And
his Marine mentality.
Yeah.
But again, beneath the surface, what a marvelous man.
Yeah.
What an absolutely marvelous man.
Yeah.
You know, he was in the right place at the right time for this place.
Yes, he was.
He brought the discipline, but he also brought a sense of, I need these guys to mature.
Yeah, all right.
And he led very much by example.
He did, and I think, you know, what happened is he went to Europe later in his career for studies advanced spirituality. Then he returned, and times had already changed, you know, that the discipline that he was used to enforcing.
Yeah.
I remember him coming to me one time saying, you know, we had to do away with, you know, three cuts and you would fail a course.
Right,
you know.
Right.
Well, he was...
Bill mentioned that.
Yeah. you know, 4 pages of yellow page legal things with names of students. Half the college would have gone. So they said, just the wave coming in, you couldn't hold against it. You know,
well,
the times were changing.
We literally. I teased my buddy Bob DiRico, who is also a class member, graduated in 68. He was born in June of 1946. He's literally first wave baby boomer.
Uh-huh.
All of us were.
Uh-huh.
You know, and our lives were being dramatically impacted by what was going on around us. The Vietnam War was huge. And there were social movements that were going on that were so less explicit during the previous decade. And the 60s just opened the doors to so many different things. It's insane. So, again, in the conversation I had with my twin, we remember the 7 to 10
uh-huh.
and the 3 cuts
uh-huh.
and the ties. And by the time we were seniors, none of that existed.
Yeah.
There was such a change in the attitude. A liberalism took over. There was no question about it.
Yeah.
But if it weren't for the success, in my opinion, of the 67, 68, 69 classes, those 3 classes, I think if those classes hadn't survived, Marist might not have.
Oh, right, right. And they've been very faithful to us since.
Incredibly.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
I mean,
incredibly.
Yeah. That's well documented. I'm sure you have something more to verify that. But to stay on course here, let me talk about or ask you, what were the were there any setbacks in your experience here? You felt disappointed. You didn't get a fair shake in one thing or another, either the course selection, you were cut out of it, or something that would have been, because I'm going to turn the coin over too. But
that's a really terrific question. I don't recall one true academic negative experience. Our dad died when we were sophomores. He had leukemia. Bill and I roomed together as sophomores in Champagne. We got room 608. And school ended, and he died in the end of May.
Uh-huh.
That was a major setback. But here's what happened as a result. I applied for and received a student proctorship for my junior year.
Uh-huh.
Third floor, Leo Hall.
Uh-huh.
Fourth floor, Champagne Hall in my senior year. The tuition, obviously, back then wasn't exorbitant. Excuse me. But paying for two was difficult.
Yeah.
Tony Campilli called Bill and I into his office the first day of school our senior year, and advised us that because of the death of our dad at the end of our sophomore year, we were actually eligible for student aid in our junior year, which we never received.
Uh-huh.
Tony did that research, and as a result, Tony was able to take what we would have gotten third year, apply it to our fourth year, and both Bill and I made it through senior year without having to come up with gigantic dollars. That's Marist College.
Yeah.
That's what they did back then.
Yeah.
You know, you were given guidance. You were given, and again, it's the group of people with whom we were dealing.
Yeah.
They looked out for us.
Yeah.
They protected us. So why wouldn't I, as now an adult and a graduate, want to do the same for the place that helped me get to where I am today?
Yeah.
I couldn't get into Marist College today. Not a chance.
Many of us couldn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it
yeah.
would have been, and this might sound egotistical, it's not intended to be. It would be their loss.
Uh-huh.
Because my loyalty and my dedication to this place has been 100% since 1968. Well, 64, really.
Yeah, right.
I don't have any negative experiences to bring to your attention. I really don't.
Now, I'm glad you told that story. Because it verifies, you mentioned Tony Campilli. You probably know Jack Ebert and his story about being pulled into service in his senior year.
Right.
And then getting a diploma at sea.
Right.
The Rich LaPietra, they looked and saw he was in good standing. He was halfway through. why make him come back to do what he already had completed, you know?
Yeah, Jack had shared that story with me. So, I have a very good relationship with Jack, and we commiserated on that.
I think that's those are kinds of things of the Marist and its foundation. I mean, besides the building, which were done by a good number of the brothers and staff at the time, benefit from the generosity of the Campiles and the Lapietras and Zuccarellos and those people who poured out so much in those early years. What would you say were one of your biggest successes, though?
At Marist?
Yeah.
The fact that I graduated.
Well,
you know what my biggest success was, I think? The fact that, and it's kind of both for Bill and I, the fact that I began to understand who I was as a person, but even more than that, the depth of the relationships that were established with some of my classmates, some of whom I have remained in touch all 43 years since we've graduated, and not just a cursory in touch, in depth. I think the fact that I was able to participate in as many activities as I did. A segue. I was standing in Doc Goldman's office in September of 67, and the principal of Our Lady of Lourdes High School called over and asked Doc, did you have anybody who you could recommend? We need a cross-country coach. Doc looked up at me, and I didn't know where this was going, and he said, yeah, I have somebody standing right next to me right now that I'm going to send over to you. So here again was another example. I started coaching as a 20-year-old senior at Marist, 16, 17-year-old high school seniors over at Our Lady of Lourdes High School as a cross-country coach. And it opened a door for me to education, which became my career for 37 years. And I stayed associated with Lourdes for 4 years. I'm still in touch with some of those kids that I coached for those 4 years. That was a marvelous experience. The successes, as I said, I was student government vice president, proctor in the dorm for 2 years. I graduated with almost a 2.7 acume, which was, Tom Wade would tease me. He said, you were one of the guys we never thought would make it based on my credentials coming in. You know, the fact that I developed relationships with the leadership of the college and I was treated with respect. The fact that I had a successful career based on what I learned here, I think those all add into the successes.
Did you know Dan Kirk?
Oh, yeah, Danny Kirk. Yeah, he was terrific.
Okay. I want how much you explain this blossoming of your own character and personality. Was it the courses? Was it the atmosphere you lived with? You could be honest with the other people. Is there any area there that comes to mind? Because they're going to ask you, how can we do it again?
That also. As I referenced earlier, I was a mere 17 and a half years old when we started here at Marist. And my dad and mom drove Bill and I up here. And I didn't know it at the time, but my dad was dying. I didn't know it. I had a very wonderful childhood. I don't remember having major issues growing up as a kid. We were allowed to roam. My mother knew everybody everywhere, so if we were ever in trouble, all she had to do was make a phone call. Life was good. So I came up here, I think, with an incredibly positive attitude. And I wasn't going to let my father down, because I knew the sweat that he put up with to send the two of us here. So I've always been somebody who, if you ask me to do something and I say yes to it, well, I'm going to commit to it 100%. And I was determined to do well here at Marist. All right, that being said, I've already mentioned the support we got from the staff, and you've chimed in that it was a small place, so we were able to have immediate contact. I've mentioned that I have friends for 43 years, the Muckers. We had a group of guys.
Yeah.
We still hang out. I had a 40th anniversary party at my house, and I had 25 of them there at my house, you know, for a 40th anniversary.
But you were not without fun either.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the time here was, they were four fantastic years.
Yeah.
They absolutely were. But yeah. I came with a package that was ready to bloom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I was given was the nourishment to bloom. And again, the people who I worked with, the support that I got, Dave Flynn. I worked for Dave Flynn in the admissions office. Yeah. I toured more kids around the Marist campus, and he told me one day, he says, "You're probably responsible for getting more students here than I ever would be because I have an open personality. I pay attention to people, and I try to read them and work with that, and it's paid me well all of this time. But, you know, I brought certain things that were in a package, and then that package was very, very, very nicely wrapped and developed, and it permitted me to grow.
Very good. Do you know where the Derby is?
Tony Balasone? Bill had the pleasure of bartending for Tony Balasone while we were here at Marist. It didn't do his waistline well. But here's a funny story again. Bill and I were sharing some of our memories. Bill started working for Tony one day a week. But while he was there, he did cleanup duty. And he was in this one time cleaning out the urinals in the men's room. And Tony comes in, he goes, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, they need to be cleaned.
Yeah.
It's don't you want me to do this?" Eventually, Tony had Bill working 4 days a week and gave him leadership roles, you know, counting the money, holding the money, doing all of those kinds of things. That's the attitude we brought, Gus.
Yeah, yeah.
That really is.
Yeah.
You did it because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you weren't looking for the kudos.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, but if you got them, well, all well and good. And
yeah.
Tony did that. And then, yeah, I tended bar at the Derby. My wife was pregnant for our second child during the summer of 1972.
Uh-huh.
And
Larry, your wife a local girl?
Yes, she is.
Yeah, okay.
She's an 89 graduate of Marist. She was pregnant with our son, Jeff, and I was tending bars 3 days a week. And the Frivolous Sal, Larry Plover's group, was just doing phenomenally well.
Yeah.
Well, they closed at 1. We were open till 3.
Yeah.
And they would come down there en masse.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, to be able to commiserate with Curiati and Plover and all of those guys, it was great. So I worked for Tony for a year.
Okay.
It was hot stuff.
Move on a little bit now. I don't know where to begin in this part of it, but I'm going to talk about change and the changes that have taken place. And now there's a whole encyclopedia here. You can talk about the changes at Marist in terms of the buildings. You can talk about the change in times. The Vietnam War, the post-Vietnam War, the Depression era, kinds of things. What strikes you about Marist now, as one who was here in the beginning, and what it is today? You know, kind of a general feeling about the growth of the college in respect to a perception that you have.
Well, since I've stayed involved with the college, I've seen, I guess, all of those changes which you've referenced. What sticks out the most, I think, is the reputation that Marist has earned in the academic world, the ability for Marist to put itself in a position to continually advance. You and I both know that the 70s were a brutal time for this place,
yes,
and it nearly didn't survive. But what it has done is make the adjustments to the changing times it the course development that it has done, the arrangements that it has done with the business world, particularly IBM, the growth that it has made in its status among other colleges and universities of similar sizes. Mm-hmm. My three oldest children, Syracuse, Wake Forest, Syracuse. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get them to come to Marist because we live too close.
Yeah.
That was a major regret on my part.
Yeah.
But the fact that Marist has adapted to all of those different kinds of changes that have taken place, the fact that they have recruited some of the best professors in their fields to be here, the fact that they've made commitment to grow their athletic program to get several programs that have national prominence, they had guts. Mm-hmm. And that permitted, I believe, the college to get to a position of prominence within its own academic area and then continue to succeed beyond it, because they were willing to take some risks and to do some things that maybe other persons wouldn't have done or other colleges wouldn't have done.
Yeah.
They survived the financial difficulties to have the Hancock Building with no
debt. I was going to say.
Give me a break.
Talk about the risks. What would be a risk in your view? Allowing women to come here?
Well, that was unique. Obviously, women were attending the evening division at the time.
Right.
I believe the first women were actually admitted to the day classes in my senior year, 67, 68.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually they opened up the dormitories. but Vassar has men.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was one of the Seven Sister Schools.
Yes, right.
The service academies began admitting women.
That's true.
Women, our culture did not permit women to be in the status that they are today for many, many years. And there's lots of ups and downs, goods and bads about it. But the admitting women, from my perspective now, was not a risk. It was the right thing to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Back then, because they started coming after I graduated, it didn't have that major impact on me.
Right. Well, one time there was an opportunity for us to take on the St. Francis Nursing School.
Right.
You know, and we turned it down because we were not available to service women. You know.
Right.
But that changed not long after, and of course, you look at it now. I mean, women are more than half of the student body.
Sure, you know? Sure.
And they've brought prominence in their athletic activities. You know.
Well, the other risks we mentioned, the buildings. There were just a small number of buildings on campus when I arrived. Sheen and Leo. The gym, which is now Marion Hall. There used to be a little building, Adrian Hall, Donnelly Hall, Fontaine, and the chapel.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
So if you're going to attract, you need to supply.
Yeah.
So the growth of the college with Champagne Hall was significant. The class I graduated with was smaller than the first group who started living in Champagne Halls, and each year the college has grown. Now I know that with the buildings that are here now, the dormitories that are being provided, the socioeconomic grouping of the students at Marist College has significantly raised. My dad was a fireman. Joey Napoli's dad was a garbage man. Rich Guglielmo's father was a plumber. You know, we had blue-collar people primarily who were busting their chops to get their kids to go to school. Today, you have a significant number of upper-middle and upper-class people who are sending their kids to Marist College with a lot of bucks.
You were the first generation of your families, for the most part, to come.
So, for the most part.
Yes.
Now, two of my older brothers did go to college. One of them went into the Army. You know, so our dad and mom worked for the Dickens to do that. Today, I mean, I when I stop to think what it costs to go to a college today.
Yeah.
My wife, when she was working, we were putting her entire paycheck to Syracuse, practically,
yeah,
to pay for our daughter there and then our son at Wake Forest. I mean, holy cow.
Yeah.
That is amazing. But the fact that Marist can still attract,
yeah,
3,000, you know, what would they get, 11,000 applicants?
Yeah,
they accepted three,
yeah,
and then they have a class of 1,000?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
yeah,
unheard of.
Yeah.
When we came, Gus, that's why I'm sure they let my twin brother come as late as April, yeah, as August.
Yeah.
They needed bodies.
Oh, he did. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Another risk, I thought, because when I was asked about it, had to do with options about future development. Building a stadium was not my priority,
right,
you know. And yet, in retrospect, it was one of the best things I think we've done.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a little sidebar there. My mother-in-law, Dorothea Taylor, was a personal friend and employee of Alexei Leonidov. Now, Dr. Leonidov was a white Russian and fled to France and then eventually came to America. He was a cardiac surgeon. And when he first came to America, he did tile work in New York City and eventually learned the language, took all the boards, came up here and established an incredible practice. Jack Daugherty was the director of development.
Yeah.
Daugherty got Dr. Leonidov to donate $25,000 to Marist College
for the field.
Yeah. We went out there in Doc Goldman's gym classes and were laying sod,
yeah,
before the first football game was ever played.
Yeah.
So when I heard, now I've been a board of director of the Red Fox Club for the last 5 years. When I heard that Tenney Stadium was going to be built,
yeah,
I had a little conversation with Tim Murray, the AD, and I said, Tim, what are you going to do with the Leonidov name? I mean, that's,
yeah,
how,
yeah,
that piece of property, okay, got started.
Yeah.
So I was thrilled to know that it's Leonidov Field at Tenney Stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you're right that it's a beautiful structure. They have to attract men to come.
Yeah.
Having a facility like that, and the baseball field is beautiful.
Yeah. Have you been to a football game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's incredible. You have almost 100 players lined up there with the Marist uniforms. They want to play.
Absolutely.
And they pay $30,000 a year. That's one of the reasons they come. They want to be.
Right.
They're not going to play Notre Dame. They're
no.
Not gonna, but they have a chance. This is our little world. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And,
yeah,
you know?
And,
it's. I mean, I. Bob Finn and Danny Hickey, but particularly Bob Finn, class of 66, was the first president of the Marist Football Club.
Yeah.
And we were known as the Vikings.
Yeah.
Well, I learned the truth as to why we were called the Vikings. Ron Levine, one of the first coaches, was able to get high school uniforms. Vikings.
Yeah.
And we were the Marist Vikings.
Their school was going out of business.
It sure
they
was.
Giving up their uniforms.
Yep.
And they sent a hired van, as it were,
yep,
two of them out to get all the thumbs. And the guys who were on the first teams didn't know how to put on the uniforms.
No,
they lied.
A lot of them didn't.
They said they should know. Yeah, they had never played football before.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
I had,
you know,
some of them in here.
Well, you know, what the hell is a Jasper down at what is now Riverview Field, used, yeah, to be Stitzel Field,
yeah,
where,
yeah,
we used to play our games.
Yeah.
See, that was another thing that Bill and I talked about. No athletic facility was available on campus.
No.
We played our football down there. We played our basketball at Our Lady of Lourdes or,
yeah,
at Duchess.
All right.
We didn't have a baseball team. The only team was soccer.
Uh-huh.
Until we did Leonidov Field, and then we finally did get a couple of football games, you know, on the field. You know, so that, too, why did guys come to Marist when they didn't have the athletic facilities?
Yeah.
And today...
The spirit of core that was there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Billy brought up another point, which I wanted to reference. When we graduated in 1968,
yeah,
seven of our classmates went on to become second lieutenants in the Marine Corps.
Oh.
And so many others were lieutenants and ensigns in the Navy,
yeah,
and in the,
yeah,
Army and so,
yeah,
on. We sent a lot of people into, yeah, the military.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, only one of our classmates, Frank Egan, was a casualty of that war.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Wow.
While we're on this observations and growth and change in marriage, what's your take on the students now?
The ones that I have had contact with, I'm impressed beyond words. Being on the Red Fox board, we have the opportunity to meet the athletes. And I have met some incredible young men and women as a result of that. Being an educator, I had the opportunity to have at least a dozen, if not more, student teachers from the Marist program come through my classroom, some of whom I encouraged to get jobs in the Hyde Park School District and who are still teaching for Hyde Park. There's just some quality people here. Again, with the status of this campus, you are attracting a higher level student. You have Fulbright scholars. You have people going to Oxford to study. You have awards being given to some of your students that are the most prestigious that are out there. That was unheard of in our day. You know, we had some great students. Jimmy Croteau, he must have been one of the most intelligent people on the face of the earth. He's a superintendent of schools down in Florida.
Well, Richard LaPietra and Ed Cashin are graduates of here. So, I mean, that's the embryonic stage. It's the beginning of it all. You know?
Absolutely.
That's the blossoming of it.
But, yeah, the student today, I wouldn't want to have to be paying for their education today, Gus. It's just remarkable. It's just absolutely remarkable.
But all the boats have gone up. We require more of everything. As you said earlier, I wouldn't be able to get in here as a student, you know. And I taught here for much less would I've been able to teach here, you know. So, but that's because times have changed, you know. But a certain part of it, it remains the same. There's a certain humility, if you want, or a certain kind of Marist spirit that has pervaded the campus.
I've had the opportunity to work with Roberta Staples. And Roberta has introduced to me to some of her remarkable young men and women through some of the domestic violence issues. And again, yes, the quality of the individual still is here. Marist has this sense of accepting persons who have a caliber about them, and they expect that that caliber will be sharpened while they're here as students. My niece is a classic example, Margaret, when she graduated in 06. Just a phenomenal human being. Great, great student at Marist. And she's continuing to do so in her professional career. You know, so it's great stuff.
What's your take about the community and its regard to Marist? Did the, like, there were complaints early on about the traffic being held up on Route 9 before the tunnel would end. There was a gradual kind of negative beat drum that, you know, it's slowing the progress of the community, or it's a hindrance, you know, not realizing that we're, what, the fifth biggest employer maybe of the area.
Well, I've had a decided advantage being on the legislature to learn more about the impact of the Marist community on the overall economic standing of the community, Dutchess County. I know about how Dutchess and Marist and Vassar and Bard and the Culinary, how they are collectively the largest employers now. If you put them all together in Dutchess County, they exceed what IBM used to do. I know that there were issues with the taking over of all of the land on Fulton and West Cedar for the dormitories. You know, that was land that was on the tax rolls, and now that Marist owns them, they're off the tax rolls. But they're bringing in students who are bringing in money, who are spending money. I know that there's issues within the Fairview community itself because of the firehouse and so on. My in-laws built a house in 1942 on East Cedar Street, lived there, died there for 60-plus years. And so I have a sensitivity of what the Fairview Fire Department is going through. But I believe the overall perception of Marist College within the community of Dutchess County is a positive one. Mm-hmm. I believe that the success of the women's basketball team has played a major role in even uplifting it. I believe the development of these buildings and the beauty of the campus. Yeah. It is unbelievably beautiful, yeah, that people cannot help but be proud, mm-hmm, of how good the college is within the community. So, yeah, is Route 9 a pain in the neck? Sure it is. But go down to Wappingers Falls. How long are you going to be stuck in traffic down there? Yeah, right. You know, so they're doing something to alleviate the problem.
Right.
Rightly so.
Yeah. And the community is invited on campus here for a number of things as well.
Absolutely. I mean,
there are lectures, there's theater, mm-hmm, there's libraries available. There's the women's basketball.
Sure.
The men's, we won't make a big point of it, but it's going to get better.
It will. It
and we've had our
will.
Day. We had our Rick Smith.
We sure did. Yeah. We sure did.
And the day perhaps will come again. We're moving on down to the end of our hour here, but is there something you'd like to say that, you know, I maybe overlooked, or I might end this way? What? You brought a series of books with you there, and maybe you just comment on a couple of things.
I have the yearbooks from 65, 66, and 68. I don't know what I did with 67. But here's a quote, and it's so, I think, indicative of what's going on today. It actually is on the inside cover of Raynaud, 1965. It reads, "Our cover painting by artist Paul Gould illustrates the symbolic character of growth and development of Marist campus. Greystone and the surrounding natural beauty have been the focal point of the college's activity and expansion." Now, how does that fit today, Gus?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you could write that in 2011 yearbook, and it would be so perfectly clear.
It's almost
clear.
The center of the whole wheel and the spokes that go out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, when we came here, there was a swimming pool, well, the Lowell Thomas building is now, you know. And people were overwhelmed to learn of that. Yeah, there was a full-size swim, and boy, did we use it.
And it's fed by an underground stream.
Underground stream.
Yeah.
And they had to take that into effect when they built Lowell Thomas.
Yeah, they were slow to realize the building was up when they had, you know what.
We better do something about this. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I think, I wear this proudly. I have my college ring on. I always reflect upon the fact that I had the opportunity to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
I reflect upon the fact that I graduated and that I got into a career. Marist, to me, today symbolizes what's really, really good about America.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small business that took the time to have growing pains, to go through some real difficult times, to make some gutsy decisions about its own future, and then follow through with it with not only vigor but integrity.
Mm-hmm.
It has established itself within this community and within the national academic community. I mean, my freshman year, you were either from Connecticut, Staten Island, Long Island, or northern New Jersey.
Right.
And we had two kids from Florida, Nate Paney and Jimmy Croto. Today, I understand we're attracting students from 40 states, different countries. And in order to do that, you have to put yourself into a position to warrant that attraction. And they did it.
Uh-huh.
They absolutely have done it. They've done it with great people, uh-huh, with great leadership, with risky moves, and a vision. Uh-huh. And I think that they've permitted it to grow and to continue to grow. I'm sure that there's going to come a time again in Marist's future where there's going to be turning points.
Uh-huh.
And I think based on the history of what they've done thus far, their record for success in the future is fairly secure, in my opinion. So I think Marist, I hope it stays college and doesn't become university, because it just has a great ring to it, Marist College. Has afforded me an opportunity as a young man, a very naive city kid, to become an adult who continues to care, continues to reflect, continues to believe in service to the general public, and hopefully will continue to do that for its future students. That's really my hope.
Well said. Thank you very much.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
Dan, it was wonderful to have you.